Before we get started, it's important I let you know this edition of radio contains mentions of violence and mentions of suicide. Please listen with caution. Well, hello, and welcome to radio. I'm your host, Ray Weaver, and I've been thinking today about my grandparents. Well, my grandparents that I knew, my grandfather and my grandmother on my father's side, were amazing, salt of the earth people. They had a farmhouse on Mountain Road in Pasadena, Maryland. No one's really sure why it was called Mountain Road, because there were no mountains. We were pretty much below sea level where we were, but it was Mountain Road. And they had an apple orchard, and we sold apples on the side of the road, and they had a pig farm, not so much for selling, but for eating on our own. We've actually been there to assist in the butchering of a hog, going out to the pig pen on a cold autumn morning and dispatching with the pig and bringing it and then throwing it into a tub of boiling water to help get the hair off the pig and then, you know, gutting it, eviscerating it, grinding it up, turning it into sausage, cutting it up. I've been there. I did all of that. As I said, they were just good salt of the earth people. You love them. You love my grandparents. I love my grandparents very much. My grandmother, she taught me how to read from the Bible. She would sit with it in her lap in her rocking chair while she would crochet a blanket. My grandfather was a hard man. I'm not going to say that I was as crazy about him as I was my grandmother, but he was a good man. Like a lot of farmers then, late 50s, early 60s, he had to do a lot of other stuff besides just be a farmer. He worked, I think, as some sort of customs agent down on the dock, because he brought home weird stuff. He would bring home India rubber balls, which, you know, in the early 60s, middle 60s, nobody had ever seen an India rubber, these hard rubber balls. He would bring home things from the docks in Baltimore, and he had a monkey. He had a monkey on the front porch of the house. There was a monkey out there. It was not a pleasant animal. It was not a pleasant animal. But I don't know that we were close. He was a hard man. But I think he was a good man. He was very old-fashioned, very old school. Women were not allowed to smoke in the house. And women and children did not eat at my grandfather's table until the men had been served. And my mother was having none of that. My mother smoked where she wanted to, and she made sure we were well fed, even though we were sitting at the kids' table. Like in a lot of families, there were a lot of grandchildren. I don't know how many we were. There were a lot of us. And the grown-ups sat at the grown-up table in the kitchen, and we sat at the kids' table, wherever they could put a kids' table together. And when there got to be too many kids, you sat in a chair with your plate in your lap, or you sat on the steps. There was that separation of kids on Sunday dinner and holidays. The families were all there together, brothers and sisters. But sometimes the kids were sort of in their own world, which was okay by us, believe me. My grandmother looked like a grandmother. She wore a house dress, and she was a little overweight, a little fat, round, lovely, wonderful lady. And my grandfather, I guess, looked like a grandfather. Rangy man, thin, smoked a pipe, smoked cigarettes. I think that's what finally killed him. Smoke finally killed him. I don't remember. I remember we weren't very close when I became a teenager, because I was into rock and roll and not into working on cars and not into internal combustion engines and going out shooting things in the woods. So sometimes we weren't as close as he was to some of the other grandsons. I was the oldest, and I think in some ways I was a disappointment to him. I don't know. We never really talked about it. You didn't talk about that kind of stuff in my family. You just were. And grandfather was grandfather, and that was that. But I do remember my dad saying to him, you know, my grandfather wanted me to quit school when I was quite young, 16, go to work on the farm and help with all that stuff. He's got enough education. The boy, he doesn't need to go to school anymore. It's a waste of time. And my father was having none of that. I went to school So, I mean, that's one thing I remember about my grandparents. Now, my other grandparents, I mean, there's a lot of stories about my grandparents. I may have told you the one already where I was walking home from school one day. I used to stay after school, didn't catch the school bus because I wanted to be in extracurricular activities like plays and sometimes sports and stuff. So I didn't catch the school bus, and my dad was working and wasn't going to come and get me. You know, he had his own life and other things to do and dinner time and all that stuff. And so I was walking home from school, and I spent a lot of time at my grandparents. I spent a lot of time at my grandparents' house. It sort of became a refuge to me in a way, and I spent a lot of time there. So I was walking home from school one day from the high school, and it was raining. It was raining really hard. And my grandfather, I saw him coming in his old truck. I saw him coming, and I thought, yeah, this is great. You know, here's Grandpa. He's going to stop, you know? So I saw him, and I waved him down. I waved at him, and he went right on by me. Just kept on going. And I had about another half mile, maybe a little bit longer to go to get to his house. Pouring down rain, cold wintertime rain. It was really cold. So I said to him, I said, Grandpa, you saw me there. You know, why didn't you stop? And he said, you know, Raymond, I told you last week to get a haircut. Your hair is just as long as it was last week, maybe longer. And I'm not going to have somebody that looks like you riding around in my truck. I have to live in this neighborhood, and I'm not going to have my friends see me with one of whatever it is you are. It's hard to explain to anybody now the hair thing back in the mid, late 60s, early 70s. It's really hard to explain if you weren't there. I mean, your family was outraged. My dad would say to me, I want to see some eyeballs and ears before you come back in this house. And so you do everything you can. You try to comb it creatively so you can keep your Beatley, Rolling Stones, Bob Dylan locks to yourself and try to hide it. Never worked. My dad was pretty savvy. And he would take me to his barber, go to this barber shop, had the pictures of all these all-American looking guys hanging on the wall with crew cuts, wearing, you know, sweaters and football jerseys and stuff. And here I am in a paisley shirt and some sort of off-color weird blue jeans. My hair, not long at all, but it was touching my ears and may have actually grazed my collar. You know, it just wasn't going to work. It just wasn't going to work. And so you have to get it cut. And then Brill Cream or Vitalis or some sort of gunk was put into your hair and it was swept back. You walked out of there stinking with that greasy stuff. As soon as I got home, I would try to wash it out of my hair, and I sure as hell wasn't going to wear my hair looking like that going to school. So you do everything you can to comb it down and try to look like a Beatle or a Dave Clark Fiverr. And then, of course, years later, I see these pictures going, what the hell, man? You look like an idiot. You don't look like a Beatle. You look like a fool with short hair combed down over his forehead. But my other grandparents, you know, because everyone gets four, I guess. I didn't know them. I didn't know them at all. My mom's parents were dead long before I came along. They died when my mom was a little girl. It was a tragic family story that was kind of kept from us for a long time. I started to hear bits and pieces of it from my Uncle Paul and some of my other uncles as I got older. But my mom never talked about it. When my mom was a little girl, her father, my grandfather, whom I don't know, never knew, was a monster. There are no other words to use. He was a monster. He was an abusive monster. And when the family moved from West Virginia to Baltimore, there were stories that the one reason that my grandmother, Mabel Malone, that's the Irish there, moved and left my grandfather, was to get away from the abuse. And she left with the boys and big family, lots of children, came to Baltimore, but he followed them. She tried to get away, but he was not having any of it. And one night he came home and came to my grandmother's place where apparently, again, these are family stories lost in the telling. Some of the details are fuzzy in my own mind because I only heard them secondhand, third hand, and I don't know I don't know the actual truths of the matter, except the one fundamental, undeniable truth that my grandfather killed my grandmother and then committed suicide in front of my mother when she was just a girl. She wasn't even in double digits yet. She was a small girl. And that was a truth that she carried with her whole life. That was a story that she lived with her whole life. That was a fact of her life. My mother was the most incredibly giving person that I have ever known, the kindest person that I ever known, the smilingest, laughingest, most fun person to be in any room. The kind of person that just struck up conversations with complete strangers in the supermarket, embarrassing her children to no end. But she carried with her this tinge of what had happened, and then what happened after that, where she wound up in not very good living conditions and was forced to live as an orphan and forced to live with people who didn't take care of her and people who took advantage of her, and yet managed somehow to become the kindest person that anyone could possibly imagine. Ours was the house where kids could come and know that they were welcome. They knew that they could come there, that Miss Nelly, that my mom, would welcome them. The only way you could make my mom mad is if you didn't realize that you were welcome and that you could certainly have a peanut butter sandwich. Just don't ask and don't make me make it for you. Go make it for yourself. We'd have band practices there, you know? We'd have band practices there, and the band would be in the basement just loud, and kids there drinking Cokes and eating pizza. And, you know, we're not talking hippie counterculture stuff here. I mean, I was a fake hippie. I was I had longish hair and I listened to rock bands and progressive rock bands and heavy metal blues bands and psychedelic bands and whatever was going on at the moment. But I didn't do drugs and I didn't drink at that time. And so, you know, we were kind of stuck in this place where, although some of my friends were smoking weed and some of them were dropping acid and some of them were doing this and doing that, you know, Pasadena, Maryland at that time was not a hotbed of counterculture. You know, it was kids having pizza and drinking Coke and trying to learn I Can't Get No Satisfaction and a Grand Funk Railroad song on the guitar, because none of us were going to wind up playing high school football. We had to find some way to meet women. And the guitar was my way. And I also loved music. And my parents supported it. So I was always very lucky in that respect, that even though they perhaps did not understand the music that I was playing and some of the stuff that I was doing, they supported the music. So I was always very fortunate in that way. And I wonder so often about my mom. And one of the many regrets that I have about my relationship with my mom is I never really talked to her about this thing with my grandparents. It came up later on. It came up because we had to start facing the fact that this thing that had no name for so long, this thing that had no reference point for so long, this bipolar, this mental illness, this darkness, this depression that started to affect my sisters and other members of my family and myself to a certain degree, it was there. It didn't have a name. We didn't know what to call it. Nobody knew what to call it in those days. No one knew why one of my sisters would take a walk to the mailbox at the end of our road, and then all of a sudden, just as a wee girl, she just couldn't come back. She became paralyzed. She became frightened so much that she couldn't walk back, and why so many things happened. And yet my mom, she never seemed to carry that with her. Now, on an emotional level, you could feel it with my mom. My mom was an extremely emotional woman. She wore her emotions on her sleeve. She cried at TV shows. She cried at, you know, songs on the radio, especially when something had to do with one of the kids, with one of her children. The waterworks would come on at brownie fly-ups and Boy Scout graduations. And when you hit your first home run at Little League, my mom would be there weeping. But she never carried that burden of sadness, which she had every right to carry, that anger that she had every right to have, that what a shitty hand she was handed, what a thing to see when she was a child. And, you know, people ask me about my family, about my grandparents. I have this great all-American story to tell on one side of grandma and grandpa and Sunday dinner and fried chicken and blue crab feasts and fishing and hunting and this huge farm. Well, not huge, but this lovely farm in Pasadena, Maryland, along the woods, and racing ponies and mini bikes, and growing up and drinking beer in the woods and trying to make blackberry brandy and nearly poisoning ourselves, and all these stories that I could tell you about all of these things. And then I have that other side, which was just darkness and drunkenness, and the brothers having alcohol problems, and pretty much all of my mother's brothers dying due to alcohol or drugs. Most of the cousins are gone. They died young. This darkness, this sickness, this illness, it just continued. And it took over so many people in the form of addiction, in the form of depression, in the form of anger and rage. And one of my aunts tried to blame the kids getting into drugs and the kids getting into things in the 60s and 70s. She tried to blame it all on the Beatles. She tried to blame it all on the counterculture. She tried to blame it all on the Rolling Stones. Yeah, the kids hadn't listened to that stuff. You know, none of this would have happened. You know, nonsense. Nonsense. Back there in the family, we have a patriarch who was a nut, was a murderer. And we don't know anything before him. I don't know anything before him at all. I don't want to do an ancestry thing. I don't want to track down the horse thieves and the drug dealers and the moonshiners that may have come from that side of the family. I really don't want to know. But I know that darkness, that thread ran through my cousin Mark and my cousin Phil and my cousin David died young and my cousin Linda died young, and so many of them just lost in that world. You know, I guess maybe I was scared. Maybe I was scared. Maybe I was just not one of those people that was going to take the risk of whatever it was going on in those days with drugs and alcohol. And I tried smoking weed a couple of times, and I didn't like the way it made me feel. I didn't like not being in control. My problems came later on when they came up with drugs that could give you more self-esteem and give you a little bit more energy and strength and courage to be on stage in front of people. Now those became too much a part of my existence for a while. But the counterculture thing, dropping acid, doing all that, nah, that was never for me. But so that's my grandparents' story for today. I don't know why it came up today, but there you go. I hope you enjoyed it. This is Radio. I'm Ray Weaver. I got more stories and more things to tell you, more songs to play for you. We'll see you next week. Don't forget to leave us a rating if you listen to it. Don't forget to tell your friends about it. Every little bit helps, you know. You can help me get this message and this stuff out to more people.
And I'll leave you with a song about my grandparents. Hope you enjoy it.
Last time I went home to be with my grandma, the home place was all but gone. Shopping center standing where we used to pick berries, and new houses where our horses would run. I guess in a while it'll fade to a memory and be forgotten before too long. So before she's called home to be with my grandpa, I want to finish my grandma's song. My grandma's house was the first one they built here. Grandpa built it with his own two hands. He loved my grandma, and he loved his children, and God knows how he loved this land. He left this world from this house that he'd lived in, with my grandma right by his side. And they tell me that Jesus came down to this house to be with grandpa on the night that he died. So Lord, when I die, don't take me to heaven. Let somebody else fill that space. Just set my feet down on a road I'll remember, and I'll walk up to my grandma's place. Every winter the snow would fill up these fields, and we'd run till we couldn't run no more, and dry our wet clothes on a grate above the fire, and talk with grandma while we played on the floor. And grandpa'd come in with his pipe and his paper. You could smell cherry smoke fill the air. I could not understand when it was time to go home, 'cause I knew I was already there. Come the summer, I'd stay over and sleep in the same bed that was my daddy's when he was a boy, and spend hours just looking at his childhood treasures and laughing at all his old toys. My sisters would pick violets to give to my grandma that she'd set in an old mason jar. We'd run chasing fireflies through these cornfields at night, till one night I ran off too far. So Lord, when I die, don't take me to heaven. Let somebody else fill that space. Just set my feet down on a road I remember, and I'll walk up to my grandma's place. Someday soon, I'll head back for Sunday dinner, and Grandma will ask me to give grace. We'll all get together on a hot summer morning to put a coat of paint on the old home place. Then we'll sit in the shade of that big tree out back and listen while the evening settles in. 'Cause I'm looking forward to that warm summer morning when I can talk to my grandma again. So Lord, when I die, don't take me to heaven. Let somebody else fill that space. Just set my feet down on a road I'll remember, and I'll walk up to my grandma's place. Lord, when I die, don't take me to heaven. Let somebody else fill that space. Just set my feet down on a road I'll remember, and I'll walk up to my grandma's place. Lord, when I die, don't take me to heaven. Let somebody else fill that space. Just set my feet down on a road I'll remember, and I'll walk up to my grandma's place.